This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders. Chris Brown here, and excited to bring you another fantastic Leadership Momentum Podcast. This one is a little of an off-speed pitch for us because we're going to look at leadership through another perspective. We're going to look at leadership from the vantage point of a professional athlete. Now, oftentimes we as church leaders can get boxed in to one way of thinking and forget that leadership is so much bigger than the church world. I also think there's a lot of wisdom of hearing from outside voices to remind us of exactly how different they see things. It's always a good ministry decision to get to know what those who you are reaching think about the church. So today we're going to be talking with World Series champion Daryl Strawberry, and also we're talking with former Detroit Lions wide receiver Ryan Broyles. Before we get started, I do want to tell you about a couple events that I have coming up that could really help your church. And I want to offer you a special discount for being part of this Leadership Momentum community. I'll be doing several Momentum trainings this spring that hyper-focus on creating a culture of generosity in your church. That sounds like something that you want, right? Creating a culture of generosity in your church. I'm not sure what role that you have in the church, but whoever the appropriate person is, they really need to be there. We have trained over 1,000 churches that are seeing unbelievable results in their level of generosity at their church as a result of large amounts of people learning how to handle the finances that God has trusted them with. I'm convinced that the biggest competition in the church today is not other churches, it's debt. And so I want to help them with that. So here's the events that I would like to formally invite you to. I will be in Dallas, Texas on March 5th and 6th. I'll be in St. Louis, March 15th and 16th, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, April 10th and 11th, and Mobile, Alabama, May 14th and 15th. And if you'd like more information about those four events, you can go to daveramsey.com. And just look for live events there. So those are the dates. And hey, who is the best person at your church that needs to attend? We have found that these trainings are best geared toward executive leaders, stewardship pastors, discipleship pastors, or possibly even a director of donor development. Here's all you got to do for the discount, which is already pretty inexpensive. Really just covers our cost. But all you got to do is just email me at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. That's chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Hey, let me know that you're interested in attending and that you heard about the event on the Leadership Momentum Podcast, and you should be good to go. All right, we're all set for our first guest today. I first met Daryl Strawberry in 2011 when he came to speak at the church that I was an executive pastor at in South Florida. I then ran into him in the Nashville airport randomly a few months ago. And then he stopped by the offices to say hello just a few weeks ago. Daryl Strawberry needs little to no introduction, that is for sure. But it kind of is just fun to relive his career just a little bit. If you're like me, these accolades will take you back to your childhood when we all watched him crank home runs on the old TV. Definitely wasn't a flat screen then, but Daryl had a 17-year Major League Baseball career in the 80s and 90s. One of the most feared pure sluggers in the game. I remember his 6'6" frame and a big, long, looping swing. During his career, he helped lead the New York Mets to a World Series championship in 1986. And then a decade later with the New York Yankees, three World Series championships in 1996, 98, and 99. He was also suspended three times. Maybe you remember this. Suspended three times by Major League Baseball for substance abuse, and of course, leading to many stories about his massive potential going unfulfilled. Strawberry was voted to the All-Star Game eight straight times from 1984 to 1991, and for years now, the reason why he's on the Leadership Momentum Podcast is given his life to full-time ministry, traveling around the globe talking about Jesus. So cool mix. You got this great athletic and leadership background coupled with a love for Jesus. Well, obviously he has seen a lot in his journey, and I thought we could learn a lot from this little conversation I had with the New York Mets Hall of Famer, Daryl Strawberry. Enjoy. Daryl, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great.
What's the latest with Daryl Strawberry and his beautiful wife, Tracy?
Well, we're very busy doing ministry. That's the most important thing is helping souls have a personal relationship with God and so they can live an abundant life and live free.
I love that. It's funny because, you know, I've given everybody your bio already, and of course, they don't need any introduction. They all are raving fans as well, at least those that are around my age. I did talk to my 11-year-old the other day. I'm like, hey, I'm getting to interview Daryl Strawberry in the next couple of days. And I said, who's that? I said, that is not cool. That is not cool at all. We've got to sit down and watch some history. I'm telling you, this is a big part of baseball history. But hey, as we start the conversation, obviously, I want to talk about some leadership principles as well. But I just want to kind of rip the Band-Aid off and let's just talk about it. Let's talk about the abuse problem with all the accolades. Kind of give us the inside information. Help us understand what was going through Daryl's life during your 17-year career.
It was a true brokenness there from the whole time I put the uniform on, Chris. I was hurting from the beginning all the way to the end. And I think a lot of times people never got a chance to see that part of me because the uniform cover up everything, because it made me a baseball player, because it made me great, and I can achieve all these great things. But inside, I always wanted to know who am I. I think a lot of times most of us really want to know who we are, not what we do. And not until we get in touch with who we are, we could never understand the purpose of why we're here. So I struggled for a very long time. I had it all. You know, I had the riches. I had everything a man can want. But, you know, what good does it do for a man to gain the whole world and his soul? Mm. And I was that man. I had gained it all, but my soul was lost, and I just really wanted my soul to be well. I didn't want the stuff no more. I didn't want the trophies. I didn't want the uniform. I just wanted to be well, and I had to work at getting well, and God led my wonderful wife, Tracy, into my life, and who led me back to the Lord and led me to get well, and that's where I stand today. I stand well because of God using people. He's never going to change what he does. He's always going to use people to help people.
Well, I know you're helping people all over the country. I follow you on social media, and I've personally brought you in to speak at one of the churches that I was helping lead down in South Florida, and you're helping a lot of people. You just recently wrote a book, Don't Give Up on Me, which I think is interesting. Obviously, I think that's a really good theme throughout your life since you've had, I guess, the public fall. But I feel like that's what Tracy's done in your life so well, but let me just give everybody a little bit of a background on this book if you haven't picked it up yet. What it does is that this book, it just weaves Daryl's story of childhood abuse that maybe you guys didn't know about, but a lot of childhood abuse and anxiety that results from that and some drug and alcohol addiction. And it mixes all that with an easy to understand explanation of addiction from trained professionals. So it's got this inspiration. And then it's also got the education, too. It's a great mixture. And I just thought, man, it'd be so great to have Daryl on the podcast to talk to church leaders about those who are in the seats who are battling addiction. And shoot, maybe some people on staff. You know, you'd never guess a guy who's hitting bombs left and right, playing right field for the Mets, is struggling with this stuff. But there could be church staff dealing with this stuff. And this book just offers hope and offers a path to healing. It speaks to, you know, all people by shedding the light on this addiction epidemic that's happening all over the country. And obviously, it's currently available. And those of you that want more information about it, strawberryministries.org. So I wanted you guys to know about it. And, you know, what would be your hope? You know, you deal with a lot of pastors. You talk to a lot of pastors, Daryl. And you've talked in green rooms with maybe a student pastor, a college-age minister, about what they're dealing with, all sorts of addictions from cutting themselves to food addictions to gambling. What are you hearing out there, and what's your hope for this book?
Well, the hope for the book is to educate people how to help people more than anything and not give up on people. For people to understand, it's okay, don't be ashamed if you got some struggles, you got some issues. And we need to get past that in the church, too. We need to get past because you got some struggles, and you know the Bible didn't say some of us fall short; it said all of us have fallen short. And we got to get past that, and we got to learn to be able to help people and meet them right where they at, and help them walk through the problems because the challenges are real. We don't know where people come from, and you know our book will educate people that. My wife just wrote a curriculum that's going to go into the state of Ohio. A bunch of pastors and leaders are going to be doing leaders' conferences sometime next year, but we're meeting with them in November called Clean, Sober, and Saved. It's a program, it's a 12-step curriculum with biblical principles to show us what's wrong with us and show us how to get well. The Lord downloaded it in her, and now it's going nationwide, you know, because of what's happening. And we're trying to educate people because we come from this place, and you got to be able to use people that have come from this place to help other people get out of that place. And you find a lot of people in churches are very ashamed that they have struggles and they have problems to overcome. And the only way you're going to overcome is putting programs around people to help them. I know a lot of pastors struggle because they've never been in this and don't know how to deal with people dealing with addiction. But that's where God sent other people, so they can educate the people, so people can feel comfortable, so they can get down to the root problems of their problem and deal with it. So we're really excited about what's about to take place. And, you know, that's on our ministry page, too, her curriculum. And she did a families and friends curriculum, too, to help the families and friends to understand how to deal with a loved one that's suffering through some type of addiction.
Mm. Well, you know, I think about all of us listening in and kind of joining the conversation today. And we all have in our lives, we have peaks and we have valleys. And when I think about your life, the uniqueness of it is the peaks are so crazy high, and the lows, the valleys, are really, really low. And then they're so condensed. It's not like 6 years in between. You literally could be winning a pennant and then literally be all by yourself lonely the next night or even the same night. And so you've got these big ups and downs in your journey. What are some of the biggest life lessons that you learned through it all?
Chris, the most important life lesson I learned through it all was to never give up and never quit. Because I remember quitting in high school when I took the uniform off my first year in high school, and when my coach stumped me on the head and I took the uniform off and I stood in his face and quit. Mm. And I realized from there that I wouldn't, moving forward in life, I would never quit again. Because you never know what journey you're going to go on, and you never know how your journey will be used to affect others. And I think that's the most important thing for all of us. It's not to give up and not quit. A lot of times, so many people give up and quit because they lose hope. But there's hope. You know, there's great hope. And there's great hope when you learn to be an overcomer and walk with God and conquer those things that hindered you in your life. And I had so many things that hindered me in my life. But my incredible wife, you know, I keep going back to that. It's because she brought hope into my life. And that's what we're here for, is to bring hope into others who are struggling, to not quit, not give up. Had I quit, the journey wouldn't be so great now. See, everybody's looking at my victory now, but they didn't look at my pain as I had to go through. They didn't know the pain and the struggle that me and Tracy went through. Everybody's looking at, you know, the glory of what God has done. And you know why God did the glory in us? It's because we did not quit. We battled and we fought. When me and Tracy started on this journey together 14 years ago, I was $3 million in debt, and I didn't have a driver's license.
Wow.
So God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He wasn't concerned about what he could get to me. He was concerned about getting me well. And I think a lot of times people don't understand that part of getting well is the most important part to be able to get into purpose.
Wow, that's so good. Now, so those are the biggest life lessons, and obviously those are huge. When I think about your biggest leadership lessons that you learned through it all, if you were to go back in time, how would you tell your leaders to lead you through it better? How would you lead yourself better? What can we learn as leaders who are dealing with someone who's dealing with some kind of addiction right now? I mean, what would you have changed? What did you learn from a leadership perspective on how everyone engaged around you?
Well, as a leader, I would never, if I had to go back, I would never publicly talk about anyone or talk about anyone's problems to anyone, anybody else. And I, you know, for a leader, you know, leadership in baseball, you know, I saw a great leader, and he was my friend. He's still my friend today. And he was a prime example of what a great leader he is. His name is Derek Jeter. He played for the Yankees. He played 20 years of shortstop for him. And people would say things about him, and he would never comment about anything that anyone said about him. And he would never go back and say anything negative towards anybody. Great leaders lead by example, and the way he went out there and played, how hard he went out there and played, that's what leadership is about. Gary Carter was a great leader. He led by example of the man that he was on the field and off the field. He was a strong Christian man, and he loved us. He never judged us. He never compromised because we were all wild and crazy, and he just loved us right where he was at. He went to dinner with us, and when it was time for us go from break from dinner, and we were going to the clubs and the night strip clubs. He would go back into the room and say, I'll see you guys tomorrow at the ballpark. He'd wave and get in a taxi. But he was an example of what a leader was. And we all wondered why he was so happy. And the reason why he was so happy is because he was free. He had freedom inside of himself. And that's what a great leader has. A great leader exemplifies the leadership of having freedom and knowing you're okay with you. See, if you're okay with you as a leader, then you can always expand yourself to help somebody else, because giving is the most important part. Giving yourself to someone else to help somebody else make a difference in their life to change is what great leadership is all about.
Wow. You just brought back a bunch of Gary Carter memories for me. That was really cool.
Yeah.
What about a best leadership moment? Is there a moment in time where you're like, man, someone just stepped up, they owned it, they changed the culture in the room, they changed the energy? They're just a dynamic leadership moment in your career.
Well, I had a lot of those moments, because when I came to the big leagues, and this is really, really crucial, I came to the big leagues and I got introduced to all the wrong things. I got introduced to drugs. I got introduced to nightlife and partying. This is what the big leagues like. When I became a Dodger and went to Los Angeles, I started doing a leadership role. Every time the younger players came up, I started using myself as an example. I wouldn't show them the bad way. I would take them all out and take them all shopping and buy them clothes and take them to dinner and stuff, and, you know, to show them what a real leadership role is all about. Try to lead as the right way, down the right example. I didn't lead them on the bad road that I started on, because I was already broken and I didn't want any other players to end up like I was.
Mm. So you're now a traveling speaker and a minister that travels the globe, and you're sharing the gospel in hundreds of churches. You've been to all kinds of churches. You've been to all parts of the planet. You've seen some crazy stuff in church, I'm sure, and you've seen some really boring moments in church too, I'm sure. There's just lots of different movements out there. But based on what you've seen, Daryl, the movement that you feel in the Big C Church, how would you specifically encourage all types of ministry leaders today, not just lead pastors, but all of us? How would you encourage us?
I would encourage the people, challenge the people to get into discipleship more than anything, because I think that's the most important part of ministry today is discipleship. If we can get people into discipleship, we could get them to grow.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people are in tune with the Word of God. And that's what the Bible talks about. My people perish because of lack of knowledge. And I think of lack of knowledge, I think that's what happened to me. That's why I was perishing, because of lack of knowledge. And I think so many people are coming to church and wanting to find God, but they are so afraid to open up and connect. And they need to start connecting and going to discipleship small groups and really open up and learn the Word of God, walk with Christian people, and learn that it's okay to be broken. I think everyone make themselves out of believing that we have it all together. And Chris, we don't have it all together. We don't have to have it all together. The only way we're going to get it together is if we start fellowshipping together and we start helping one another. And I think that's a real, real key to what God is trying to do in the body of Christ, is getting people to grow so they can get away from the worldly things and they can enter into His rest and enter into peace with Him.
Well, thank you so much for encouraging us today, and thank you for all you and Tracy do for the kingdom. If there's some leaders that are not already connected with you and all the work that you're doing, how do my friends listening in, how do they best connect with you and all the work that you're doing and how much you can offer the church?
Well, they can always go to strawberryministries.org, and my niece run our ministry page of traveling to come and speak, and Tracy, and hopefully we can bring hope to them. And you know, people that need curriculums, being set free. Me and Tracy have been set free. She's got over 16 years. I'm at 14 years of recovery. And, you know, we've been clean by the blood of the Lamb, and we've been set free to help people. And that's how they can reach us if they really want us to help them. And, you know, my wife can train the church into groups of helping people, learn to help people who have substance abuse problems. Don't turn people away because they have a substance abuse problem. We don't know their real issue. Don't turn people away because they have a sex problem or gambling problem. The curriculum is for that, to help them, to educate them. And it's biblical, 12 steps biblically that will help them understand what's wrong with them to bring them to wholeness and happiness. So that's the hope. That's the hope that we want to bring to America, and to bring to people. God has given us a platform to do that, and we just want to continue to be, you know, grateful for his grace and his mercy and allow us to do that to help people.
Well, on behalf of all of us here at the Leadership Momentum Podcast, we're very thankful for you, and Really appreciate you, Daryl. Thanks for being on. Well, what a great way for us to wrap up our conversation. I hope you can see Daryl's big heart, his heart to help people by leveraging his past struggles and his story. He's such a great guy, and I know that he can serve you and your community well if he hasn't already. Well, next up, we're going to hear from Ryan Broyles, who played for the Detroit Lions from 2012 to 2015, and he's going to share with us some leadership lessons that he learned playing football in the NFL. Some of the fastest and strongest human beings on the planet, but also some of the sharpest coaches and leaders that are out there. And maybe I'm weird, but whenever I've geared up for like a crazy Easter season, which, you know, many of you are in that boat right now, or maybe a Christmas season, whatever, going into this big, huge ministry season ahead of me, I've kind of envisioned myself as an NFL linebacker. One of the ones I've always envisioned myself as is Ray Lewis. And those of you who know me, I'm far from Ray Lewis, but with that kind of intensity going into game day, and then being coached by an intense coach like a Jim Harbaugh, just getting after it, gets me fired up. And I said, I can do this. And I tell myself, it's game time and it's time to step up. Ryan is he's going to give us a glimpse of some of those on the field and locker room environments, those get you jacked up, get you inspired type environments. These are environments that have inspired him. And hopefully what we can do is we can take what we hear into our ministry context, because, folks, we're not just battling over a football. We're battling over life and death. We're battling over eternity. And may we take our pursuit more seriously than athletes do. Another thing that we talk about is how we as leaders should treat athletes and treat celebrities when they attend church. What works? What doesn't work? What makes them feel comfortable? What doesn't make them feel comfortable? So I know you're going to enjoy this quick conversation with former Oklahoma Sooner, former Detroit Lion, All-American, and All-Big 12 selection, Ryan Broyles. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on the Leadership Momentum Podcast.
All right, well, thank you for having me.
Very few of our listeners have had access to the NFL life, and I've already kind of filled in everybody of your time in the NFL and some of your experiences, but we wanted to dive a little bit deeper into the leadership component of the things that you've experienced. And so I got some questions that I wanted to ask you that I know that'll help this particular audience. First thing I want to ask is just overall, top leadership lessons, you think back to your career, top leadership lessons that you've learned from sports in general, and not just in the NFL, not just in the NCAA, but just in sports in general.
Yeah. You know, I think first and foremost, you've got to be responsible for your own actions. Mm. And there are many people that will buy into what you do or what you believe in if you actually do it and not just say it. So I guess one of those deals would be integrity. Someone says they're going to do it, they show up, they do it right. So I think that might be one of my biggest leadership lessons that I've learned and I've tried to implement.
Mm. Well, you didn't have to start off so convicting. Modeling, that was convicting off the top. That's good.
And when I just told you that, it reminded me of one of my old coaches that just passed away about 5 years ago. I mean, that's what he instilled all the time. So sorry about that.
No, I had a baseball coach in high school that always drilled this in my head. He always said, responsibility, initiative, and discipline.
Yeah.
Responsibility, initiative, and those three words, he just drilled way down in my spirit, and I've never been able to shake it. So
for sure.
I definitely had a coach with a similar situation. So give us the number one experience that taught you the most about leadership. If you think through, like, maybe it was a play, maybe it was a locker room chat, maybe it was an off season, but your number one experience that taught you the most about leadership.
I don't think it's one occasion, but obviously in my lifetime, coaches have played a big factor, as they do in a lot of people's lives. So I can't say there's one thing that I pinpoint, but leadership, what I've learned from coaching at least, is being selfless. Someone that's trying to guide you in a way
that they give you information and let you decide what to do. And I know what I've done in the finance world, it's almost like you get X, Y, and Z, and then, hey, you're either going to get it done or you're not. I feel like some of the coaches I've had, it's about giving you the information and letting you decide what you want to do with it. So I think that's, try not to get too emotional about it, but I think that would probably be the main thing that some of the better leaders in my life have done and that have changed me, I guess, when it comes to even raising my son.
So good. Now, who are some of the people in the NFL that you'd respect in leadership the most? Just overall, maybe you've personally witnessed it or you've just known it secondhand.
Yeah, well, Glover Quinn from the Detroit Lions, safety. A man of very few words, but he leads by example. If he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. He's going to treat you with respect. And I've never mentioned him. I've never actually had many questions about leadership. And he would never think I'd feel this way about him. But he's a guy that's still going strong right now. Not the biggest dude, not the fastest dude, but a dude that when he uses his voice, it really means something. And in my life, that's definitely important. So Glover Quinn of the Lions.
That's a good reminder, too, that less is more sometimes with our words, and that our words are more powerful if they're not yapping all the time. that's a good
reminder. Without a doubt. Well, we live in the information age, man. You can get any information you want. Now it's about emotions. It's how you're going to connect with someone, you know? And so I think in my point of my life, it's always been the X's and O's, do this, do that. Now it's like, okay, it's about relationships. It's about connecting with people. So now that I look back on it, some of the better moments of my life were people that when they were just emotional, you know what I mean? It wasn't just the X's and O's in between the line. It was like, hey, they're pouring out their heart for you. So I think that's the faith into it.
What about a time in your journey in your career when you've modeled great leadership? I know it's a tough question to answer because you feel prideful, but I'm going to follow up that question with a time where you feel like you didn't model it and you could have modeled more.
Yeah. I think in leadership, you have to know when you are in that position, or you have to know when it's time to be in that position. Mm-hmm. Coming back to my senior year in college, my receiver coach said, hey, Ryan, you are a leader. You are a leader. It's time for you to step up. I never looked at myself as a leader because I never wanted to be selfish. I never wanted to be a guy that had to do things right or wanted to do things right for the greater good because people were watching. But my senior year, after he told me that, people are watching you no matter what. Mm-hmm. If you want people to watch you or not, they're going to watch you. So I think going to my senior year, Coach Jay Norvell, he's the head coach of Nevada right now, he really instilled in me, hey, it's time for you to step up. So one, someone believing in you, and two, being selfless and really going forth and living your life as if people are watching you. And then there's definitely been times when I know I'm in a position to lead and I go and I do bonehead things like I've done earlier in my college years where I jeopardize my career. So those were times that I was not in the best position to show good leadership.
Well, we're talking to church leaders today on this podcast. Most folks listening in are church leaders or ministry leaders or leaders of other nonprofits. So I just want to ask you a church-related question. What are you and your peers looking for? Let's say you're going to go to church this weekend or you're going to go to church next month and maybe you haven't been in church in 6 or 8 weeks, but you're just going to go. What are the things that you're looking for as an NFL player? What are NFL players and athletes and celebrities, what are they looking for in a good church experience? I know some churches that pour it on the red carpet and they over-treat them and make them feel uncomfortable. Some ignore them and that's offensive. What are y'all looking for?
I hate that you say y'all because we're much more than football, just football players. We're human beings, but I understand what you're trying to say.
That's actually what I'm getting at.
Yeah, we're normal people, but at the end of the day, like, I think anyone that goes to church, obviously you want to be around like-minded people or you wouldn't be there, and you don't want to be put on a pedestal. You know, there's been many times where I shy away from situations because I know people are going to put me on a pedestal. I don't want to be on a pedestal. I want to be just like everyone else. And you definitely see that at church. Or you just see that in places where your name could be used to grow. Now, there was one time that I had a pastor of mine that said, hey, Ryan, no one's after you because you're an athlete. They're after you because you have influence that can influence others to be more like you. So it's one of those give and take deals. Do you know if people are after you so you can help God's purpose, or people are after you so they can go home and be like, hey, I hung out with this guy, or this guy goes to my church, or what can this guy do for me? Can he donate this or that? You know, so I just, at the end of the day, it's just you meet a person and how they are. You feel their emotion. You feel their personality. We're not all meant to connect or vibe with everyone. We're supposed to be cordial.
Yeah.
But if you can tell if there's a pastor that connects with you, that this has nothing in common, no personality traits are the same, but they continue to force themselves on you, that's where it's like, okay, that's a little weird. Now, if it's natural, completely different. You know, at the end of the day, you have to try to connect with everyone and show everyone the same type of love. Favoritism is never good, especially if you're in a place of celebrity and you start to see those things.
How quickly can you discern when the
very, yeah.
you know where I'm going with
very,
this.
Very quick.
Is
yeah,
it pretty quick?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you can just tell if somebody's, you can tell if they're genuine and you've heard the sayings over and over. Like, so what do? When someone already knows what you do, like, you know, it's like
yeah.
weird things that you start to pick up over time. And it's just like, which I'm cordial with anyone. I love people at the end of the day, and I give people the benefit of the doubt. But you can tell when it's more forceful or when something cool happens in your life and then they want to contact you. You know how it goes.
Mm.
Anyone, if someone gets a job promotion and now somebody wants to connect, or if you get a new car, someone wants to ride the car, or,
yeah.
you know.
So you had mentioned the donations, just trying to really help out this particular leadership community. How should lead pastors approach athletes and celebrities? And I know you're everyday people, I know that, but there is a uniqueness to you as well. How should lead pastors approach athletes and celebrities when asking them to give? Let's just say that they had the right motives, okay? Which I would think that most of them do. They had the right motives, the
yeah.
connection's there, it's not weird, but they still have this tentativeness. They know that you have the means, they know that you have the heart that you'd want to,
yeah.
they know they have the need. What's the good way to approach you, and what's the wrong way?
Wow, that's deep. Never really thought of that. I kind of just live it and go off of that.
You go on instincts, right?
Yeah, I've never like, first and foremost, if you're not plugged into a church or a community, that's where it should start. Mm-hmm. I'm plugged in. I've been plugged in no matter if I lived in Detroit or here. So I've been in churches where their main mission was to raise money for Haiti, and I get to be a part of that. I've rarely had many churches outside of my own church try to get me to donate. I have had other churches get me to come speak, but not trying to force me on their mission. Yeah, so I think if you're in that world, you have a family home where everyone's on the same page. I've never felt like there was a division where people are just out to get me because of the money at various churches.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I answer that, but I've never been in a situation where someone's just targeted me from the church.
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't my church.
Right.
But yeah, red flags, like I said earlier, it's just the way people approach you. You know, you can tell if somebody has a good soul or a good heart, and if you align with what they align with, mm-hmm. is really at the end of the day, it's about trusting someone.
Yeah, well, I've pastored in southern Florida in the Miami area, and there was lots of celebrities and athletes down there, And I just remember, even with the right motives and the pure heart, I remember athletes would come in or celebrities would come in, and I want to approach them just to start a relationship, but I'm also like, no, I want them to be able to be anonymous too.
Yeah.
I know that they know that I know who they are, and so then I feel like they feel ignored. So I'm like, I don't know what to do yeah. right now. And so I just thought it might be helpful for us to talk about it with the leadership community. Like, what do we do? So
that makes sense, and that's good perspective. Mm-hmm. When you know something, but you don't want to confront it, and that just makes it even more awkward. So if you just see a guy walk in the door, and you're like, you know what? He looks like a dude that has a good heart or a good soul.
Mm.
You just try to figure it out from there.
It'd be the same like approach that I would have with any human being who walks in the door. It's just,
yeah.
It's funny when a 6'10" basketball player walks in and it's so obvious. And it's like, well, I want to leave them alone.
Yeah.
Then I talked to other 30 people, but I didn't talk to them. I feel like it's rude.
Man, that's crazy because there's real life, and then there's the other side of it where you got to like think about not just superstition, but you're thinking about everything but just normal interaction. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And when those things play a part, it definitely makes it a little harder. But yeah, just try to treat everybody the same.
Mm.
Obviously, it's going to be different because you see a guy on TV, you're going to think of him a little bit different.
Yeah.
So that's why I like to share my story. Just be like, listen, I'm just a normal dude. We're normal people. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? We just happen to play a sport that's idolized in America.
Well, the guys, the church leaders that I know around the country who are also listening in right now, the ones that do it the best are doing it the way you just said it.
Yeah.
And they realize that these are real human beings and they care for their soul, not on what they do. So
without a doubt,
that's good affirmation for us to hear from you. Well, man, I appreciate you joining us.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, man. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, very, very kind. How can people connect with you on social media?
My handles on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are just at Ryan Broyles. Just my name, RyanBroyles.
Okay.
Pretty entertaining on there. I got a little boy, so you'll probably see him a lot. And then I'd obviously talk about finances and some leadership stuff and some motivation stuff and just some everyday life things. So you can definitely find me on there.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Well, what a great guy. So easy to talk to and so down to earth. I actually reached out to Ryan because of a MarketWatch article that was written about him a few years back. And it had this headline: Why NFL player Ryan Broyles lives like he made $60,000 last year and not $600,000. And the tagline said this: he keeps to a $5,000 a month budget, no cable, no landline, and he drives a U-Haul when he moves. Well, if you know me and you know how I'm wired, you know I was crazy interested. I knew that he and I would have an effortless connection when I read this particular paragraph in the article. The 27-year-old Broyles made over $2 million from the Lions between 2012 and now, but he keeps to a budget of $5,000 a month in total spending. That's a lot of income for most people, but spending less than you earn, if you're able to, is smart in any income bracket. Of course, you know I love that. Why can't more people get this? Spend less than you make. Wow, so inspirational, right? Well, folks, I told you earlier about some events that I have coming up, and that is exactly what we'll be talking about. How to inspire people to start doing just that, freeing up margin in their life. And when there's margin, well, there's ministry. Those dates and locations, again, are Dallas, Texas, March 5 and 6, St. Louis, March 15, 16, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, April 10 and 11, and Mobile, Alabama, May 14th and 15th. I would absolutely love a chance to meet you and would love to help your church see an epic turn when it comes to generosity. Now, people are missing out on the opportunity of giving, and we owe it to them to help them. It is the most fun that we can ever have with money. We just have to get their finances in a place where they truly can enjoy it like God intended. Again, more information about those events, DaveRamsey.com, and just click on Live Events. Well, folks, that's a wrap for today. If we haven't connected on Twitter and Instagram yet, let's connect at Chris Brown on Air. And until next time, I pray that God continues to bless you and bless your ministry. God bless y'all.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. To learn more about Momentum, go to stewardshipcentral.org/solutions. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his Life, Money, and Hope podcast, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following at Chris Brown on Air. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast.